Our sponsor today is VMware. And did you know VMworld begins September 29th, 2020, and it's free? You should attend because it's interesting, it's informative, and let's face it, you're not going anywhere anyhow.
Yeah, so since you're not going anywhere, register now via bit.ly/D2C VMworld. That's bit.ly/D2C VMworld.
The internet is a mystical place full of fairy dust, flying unicorns, and tiny packets zipping around to their destination at the speed of light. At least, that's the ideal, but in reality, we all know it can be unpredictable, occasionally broken, and utterly mysterious. Now that we're all working remotely and using 100-plus cloud services, how does one even make sense of a network design, let alone optimize it? Well, here comes SD-WAN, bringing its unique magic to the internet, rendering order amidst chaos. My intrepid co-host Ethan Banks has been doing some serious homework, talking to SD-WAN vendors, surveying the landscape, and today on Day 2 Cloud, he's going to share with me and you, dear listener, what he has discovered. Welcome to Day 2 Cloud, and welcome my co-host Ethan. Hey, Ethan.
Hey, buddy, how's it going? I was looking in the notes, and I'm so proud of you. Your lowercase I on intranet, you're conforming to new writing standard, what's expected of us.
It's true. Once Drew said it was okay, then that was the signal to me that I can stop capitalizing the internet. Let's be honest. Though he's right. It is singular. There is an internet, so it should be, you know, uppercase. But you know what? If the official style guides say that it should be lowercase, that's what it's going to be. We're going to try something a little different today. So I'm going to pretend that I'm an organization who's doing a network redesign, and you're going to pretend that you're a networking consultant helping out with that design, and you're going to try to educate me and get the cloud incorporated in my design and optimize traffic and all that good stuff.
Can I be super elite and try to make you feel inferior?
If you're a good consultant, absolutely. We all know how that goes.
Perfect. Let's do that.
Actually, that's more of a junior consultant thing. Like, I just read this thing. Let me stand up and talk down to you about it for the next half an hour. So maybe we don't.
All right,
do that.
I will try to. I'll try to be a good consultant and avoid mansplaining. And yeah, I like this role. The whole attempting to explain all of this stuff about SD-WAN cloud on ramps via the consulting method. Because to set this up for those of you that are listening, I've talked to several different SD-WAN vendors and had them give me exactly where they're at in their network architectures to get you to the cloud faster. That's the big idea here. And there's all the offerings are not the same. They really have a lot of variety to them. And it will come down to your business needs, what it is that you would ultimately select. There is no one right answer. So Ned and I felt this was a good way to go about this and see what we can figure out with the business and consultant sort of a conversation.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'll set it up a little bit about the organization I work for. So let's say I'm a network administrator at a large global organization. We're a multinational manufacturing company. We have sites in North America, EMEA, and APAC. And we have a global WAN that's managed by a third party. Coming down the pike, we've got some projects coming up that we want to incorporate and maybe try to save some money on this global WAN thing we're doing. So we've got two cloud projects. One is going to be an IoT project hitting Microsoft Azure from our manufacturing facilities. And another one is a data processing app that's going to run in AWS. And that is going to be pulling from our data centers where we're aggregating information. And finally, we're also thinking about making the move from on-prem Exchange to Office 365. So that's your setup.
Okay. So that's a lot of setup. We've got AWS with a project. We've got Azure with a project. And we've got a SaaS play where there's Microsoft Office 365. There's a global organization. You see, you're scattered over many regions of the world, certainly. You've got a global WAN that exists today, you said. What else did you say to me? That's a good place to start here. As far as the global WAN goes, do you have an SD-WAN product that you're using already, or are you shopping for something?
We are shopping for something at the moment. Right now, we've just got a bunch of Cisco routers that are being managed by our MSP. We don't know if we're paying the right amount for them, and all of those routers are starting to age off. So we need to start thinking about a different way to approach our global connectivity.
Okay. So a few things. I would say, one, if you had an SD-WAN provider, that's where I'd start. Hey, SD-WAN provider I already have, what does your cloud on-ramp solution look like? How do you get me to the cloud faster? And start there. Because if it's good enough, why swap out your SD-WAN solution or add a different SD-WAN solution to the mix? Too complex. Why manage those different vendor relationships and so on? But since you're not there, you're already shopping for SD-WAN, then what happens is the cloud on-ramp part of the solution we're going to talk about today becomes part of your overall SD-WAN selection criteria, because this is one feature of a much larger platform. Now, do you kind of know what SD-WAN is, or is it just a clever marketing buzzword you've heard about?
You know, it's this buzzword that was handed down by my boss, Gary, and he said, hey, we need one of these SD-WAN things. I read about it in CIO Magazine. And so now it's incumbent on me to figure out what this thing is and whether we actually need it.
All right, let me give you the 10,000-foot overview. SD-WAN is software-defined wide area network. So you've got a global WAN today. Let's assume it's some kind of MPLS network or something with one or more carriers like AT&T or Verizon or whoever, something big like that. And you said it's Cisco routers. That probably means there's a lot of traditional protocols like BGP and OSPF, and maybe there's some DMVPN in there and a few things like that if it's a typical sort of a global WAN running over MPLS. All right, throw all that out. Forget about all that traditional stuff.
Okay.
Software-defined WAN gives you the ability to forward traffic in ways that traditional routing protocols like OSPF or BGP can't do. They are bound by routing protocol standard rules, and the software defined part of SD-WAN means I can use whatever routing policies I want, and the SD-WAN magic software will interpret my policies and forward traffic accordingly. That means rather than normally you do things shortest path first, as what's the fastest way from point A to point B, I can instead write policies that says, hey, my voice traffic, it needs to get this really superior treatment, no packet loss, no jitter. And I'm going to therefore, according to the SD-WAN deities, forward it across this link. But this other traffic, say it's like some bulk transfer traffic that we don't care about so much, I can transfer it across this other link because it doesn't need a super special line to make sure that traffic gets delivered. The rub here is it's proprietary. So when you lock into an SD-WAN solution and you write all these policies and you get all your traffic flowing the way you want it to, you're kind of locked into that solution. They aren't interoperable. There's no internet IETF RFCs that govern this stuff. But on that platform, once you have selected whatever it is, you get a lot of routing flexibility. It's pretty cool. So what questions came up in your mind as we went through that?
Well, the first thing I thought of was this ability to kind of do quality of service for my traffic. Now, the reason I'm paying all this money for my MPLS network is that I'm getting some sort of guaranteed performance from these circuits that I'm leasing out from AT&T and Verizon and such. Could this be a reasonable replacement for those circuits using just regular internet if I'm able to add all of these QoS policies on top of it?
Yeah, very much so. In fact, what a lot of people who have turned SD-WAN on have found is that the quality and performance they get from the internet circuits that they're using to make up the basis of their WAN instead of these service guaranteed WAN links that are very expensive and so on, a lot of times the internet circuits perform as well or in many cases better than the super expensive MPLS private circuits, which is pretty interesting. We could go into why, but the bottom line is there's very little to fear with you using internet circuits as WAN. The big thing is in your design, just you're going to be using at least two internet circuits to give the SD-WAN router something to choose from. And you're going to want a little diversity there, where ideally you'll have two carriers that are tier one. like a Verizon has a tier one, they're a tier one backbone player, and someone like a level three, or whoever owns level three today, I forget, but someone who's right. at the top of the food chain, like Telia Carrier or somebody like that, that can give you premier first-class access to the internet that's diverse from your other one. And so now you've got good diversity, you've got good performance, you're connecting to two top-level internet carriers. And now the SD-WAN's got something to choose from. One of them's bound to work well. You get a lot of bandwidth. You're going to order a lot of bandwidth, I mean to say, more than you get from your private MPLS. And bandwidth covers a multitude of sins. Now, one minor point, like you said, QoS, which in the networking world means a thing. You don't really do QoS exactly with SD-WAN, because that assumes you own the link from end to end and can afford can enforce this very specific traffic prioritization policy. Mm-hmm. You kind of can't do that. But what you can do is say, hey, I'm going to send this traffic, like we were talking about the voice traffic earlier, across this link that, because I'm testing it all the time, I know it can deliver it for me in the way I need it to be delivered.
Okay. So it, because you don't own the links, like you said, if I'm deploying this in my environment, I am relying on the internet speeds and feeds that are available to me. And mm-hmm. hopefully that I have at least one reliable circuit from each location that I'm using if I want to get this guaranteed, well, somewhat guaranteed delivery of my voice traffic in this example.
Yes.
So if I'm thinking about adopting Office 365, which I was talking about before, and I want to use the voice traffic component of that for, you know, video and audio chat and answering phone calls, then I'm going to want some sort of prioritized thing in my SD-WAN to handle that.
So, okay, so let's dive into that specific thing. You said SaaS and effectively Office 365, and we're talking about possibly needing to get voice traffic in and out of the SaaS cloud. Two things that SD-WAN can help you with. One is not related to cloud on-ramp as such, but is an important technology that, since we don't own the circuits end-to-end, is important. And that's FEC. FEC would be a technology that allows me to either use parity or duplicate the sending of packets across a couple of different channels to guarantee that even if there's loss in one of the links, the other link or parity is going to figure out what was supposed to be in there and put all that back together for me. It's gonna fix that.
Gotcha.
So that's one piece of the puzzle. For the voice traffic, you turn on FEC, and I'm trying to remember what the acronym stands for. My brain says forward equivalent class, which is a different acronym. That's not the right one. It'll pop up to my brain later. But but you turn that on, that helps. The next thing that helps with SaaS, and this could be voice traffic or any kind of SaaS, is that different of the SD-WAN providers actually have presence of some sort up near the SaaS provider.
Hmm.
That means there's another SD-WAN component we haven't talked about, and that is all these SD-WAN routers that you would deploy across your network are interconnected with tunnels. So they stand up a tunnel from one SD-WAN router to the other so that all your traffic is encrypted and secured inside the tunnel to go between one SD-WAN router and the other. Well, you don't have an SD-WAN router up at the SaaS provider because that's not how that works. You don't have nowhere to put the thing, right? Yeah. So some of the SD-WAN providers actually have a SD-WAN router that basically they give you a chunk of. It's a multi-tenant cluster or something like that. You terminate a tunnel up there. That means you're now very close to the SaaS provider. So you tunnel from your SD-WAN router to their SaaS cluster SD-WAN router, and now you're very close to the SaaS traffic, more or less in the same data center, and you can gain some of the optimization benefits from there.
I see. So they've put it in some sort of colo that is just a big interconnection facility, and they've got the direct connector, the express router, whatever it is, into that cloud provider, or at least they're very close to
that
it in proximity.
That is exactly what happens. Equinix is a big player here. We talked about Equinix on this show before. They're a big player where there's cross connects. In a few cases, some of the SD-WAN providers even have a tighter partnership with the SaaS provider, whoever it might be. All of the SD-WAN vendors are going to have some connection close to the big SaaS services. That's what I mean to say. Like Office 365 is the big one we're mentioning, but also Salesforce and some other ones tend to be commonly in the list.
Right. So while we're on that sort of topic of how my traffic is getting to a SaaS provider, one of the things that I mentioned up front is we're looking at building out an IoT service using Microsoft Azure that's connecting to all of our manufacturing plants. So how would SD-WAN play a role in getting my traffic from those factories to the cloud? Because right now, I'm routing everything, backhauling it to a location on each continent. So I've got, you know, my New York office, and I've got my Paris office, and I've got my Tokyo office. Those are my internet egress points today. But I don't necessarily want to do that in the future.
Okay. So a big part of this is a security conversation, you know, and another part of this is, what are we actually doing up in Azure? Does that mean there's workloads in Azure that are doing processing of IoT transaction data and sending an answer back, something like that?
The IoT portion is, it's feeding data to build a model up in Microsoft Azure, and then the updated model is going to get pushed back down to the factories on a nightly basis.
Okay, so it sounds like it's Azure IaaS or PaaS potentially, something like that, where you've got a presence in Azure of your own, and you're running processes against that data up there in Azure.
Correct.
Okay. So there's two components to this here. One, you're talking about right now, you're backhauling data to all of these regional headquarters locations and then sending them out, which of course adds a lot of latency here. Now, maybe we don't care too much about latency in this specific scenario because you said it's going to be processed and then sent back to the factories overnight. And so perhaps shaving milliseconds off of each transaction isn't of the biggest deal, but maybe it is. You know, I don't know. I can tell you the way I would design it. Rather than backhauling to regional locations, I would set up direct internet access at each site. So I've got a factory. It's got the IoT network. It needs to send that data up into the cloud. Okay. Plumb internet into each of those factories and then send that data through an SD-WAN router that you would put at the edge of that network and send it up into the cloud directly rather than backhaul it. Now, the big architectural thing here that everyone's going to be throwing red flags and go, no, because security, we've got to backhaul it to headquarters because that's where we do all our inspections. You can't just send it into the cloud directly. What are you thinking? Well, here's the thing. Several of the SD-WAN vendors that are out there offer security services in a few different ways. So let me name a couple names here. One is Cato Networks. They have security built into their solution. That is, let's say you had chosen a Cato Networks SD-WAN solution. You're using this direct internet access model that I'm recommending here, where you've got internet connectivity coming into the factory and you're going directly, not backhauling through headquarters, but you're going directly up into the internet and then to the cloud. If you're using Cato, well, Cato's got a whole security stack of functions. And if you have to license each of them, of course, they don't just give that to you, but you check the boxes of the things you want, and it will do all of those traffic inspections for you to make sure that you're getting the security requirements met, your compliance requirements met for the nature of the data that you're sending through their network. So you send it to the SD-WAN router. The SD-WAN router sends it to the Cato network. The Cato network does all the security magic, delivers it across their network to the cloud, and then up into your Azure instance. You do your processing, and it comes back via the reverse path. That should shave off transactional latency and still give you the security and stuff that you're looking for. With one disadvantage, which is now you've got more internet circuits to be managing.
That is true. That's definitely a consideration. Speaking of that, you know, if I am going to be, you said at least two internet circuits at every location where I want to do SD-WAN, which is considerably more work than what I'm doing today, where I have an internet, major internet link at every headquarters. And then I have my managed WAN that I've farmed out to an MSP. How am I going to bring all of this in-house and manage all these new internet circuits? Can I farm that out to an SD-WAN company?
Now, you say considerably more work, as in you need a human to stand up the internet circuits and a human to hook them up and then kind of manage them once they go live, that sort of thing?
Yes, yes, all of that. And then also a human to track things like billing and making sure that we mm-hmm. pay for this internet access and don't let a line drop because it wasn't yep. paid for in a timely manner. It's a lot of administrative overhead that I didn't have before.
So the question, the answer is, it depends. How do you want to do it? Do you want to farm it all out? There are still players in that space that can do that for you. There are lots of MSPs that play in the SD-WAN space where you can go to them and you won't necessarily even know who the SD-WAN provider is. They can rebrand it for you and just manage it all for you. So absolutely, there are MSP options out there for SD-WAN, lots of them. Whether they're third-party, kind of independent MSPs, or whether it is your carrier or a carrier of some sort that is offering you this SD-WAN service. The caveat there is, like any outsourced service, do you know what you're getting? Do you know what the capabilities are? Are you able to get the services specifically that you want? Do you actually know what's going on when the thing breaks, and so on? I don't think SD-WAN is rocket science, but even if you want to do it yourself and you don't have time, I mean, I guess you want to outsource it, right? So I get that. And I also get that some people just don't find business value in managing it themselves. You get more power and flexibility, but the bottom line is, yes, Ned, you can, with the right provider, outsource your SD-WAN and get all of these features and functionality.
Another,
it depends, you know.
Right. Another concern that has come up is bandwidth utilization at these regional headquarters, because since we're consuming more cloud and more cloud services, the amount of bandwidth we're using out of these facilities has just been skyrocketing, and it's starting to outstrip what our firewalls are capable of. So is there a way that SD-WAN can help me out with this bandwidth issue?
Yes, so many ways. Let's go back to one. If you do a little re-architecting and give every edge point, every edge office, factory, whatever, their own internet access, well, that takes some of the pressure off of the headquarters. If you outsource your security to the SD-WAN provider, like Akedo and some others that play in that space, then do you have to do all of this firewall inspection and so on yourself? Well, you don't. You should be able to have them do that. Even if you're not using Akedo, you could use someone like a Zscaler. Zscaler integrates with a number of SD-WAN boxes where the SD-WAN solution isn't doing any security inspections yourself. You're not doing them within the box, but you can say, hey, SD-WAN, I want you to send this traffic to Zscaler. Zscaler does all of the security magic for you and then forwards the traffic on to its destination from there, so that it's in the middle. It's not like loop it up to Zscaler, get it back, and then send it back out again. They'll forward it on to where it's got to go for you. So what I'm saying here is you're effectively doing a scale-out solution for your security. Rather than scaling up and getting bigger and bigger firewalls at headquarters, you're saying, hey, I'm going to spread out who's doing my security inspections for me. Now, there's yet another kind of variation of this. There are SD-WAN providers that don't do the security up in the cloud. They actually do the security on the SD-WAN router itself that would be at the edge of your site. So before it ever leaves your site, the security, it's basically a router that's got firewalling and inspections all built into the one box. So that's yet another flavor of this. And I think that's the best answer, is you spread this out. It's got that trade-off, Ned, of more complexity, where you've got more circuits to manage and maybe more providers to manage, because not every WAN provider offers internet service everywhere you're likely to have offices. But, you know, architecturally, you've got that scale out thing going for you now.
Okay. Are there some ways that it can help with bandwidth usage for the things that we are sending up and receiving back from our AWS deployment? Because we're going to be putting a data analysis and warehousing tool up there. We're going to be pushing a lot of data up and probably pulling a lot of data down. So is that something that SD-WAN can help us with, or should we just look to do something like Direct Connect?
So let's talk about WAN optimization for a minute here. So there's a technology. Mm-hmm. You remember Riverbed? Was that you remember from back in the day? Okay. Claim to fame was WAN optimization. That is, let's reduce the amount of traffic we're sending across the wire. And Riverbed back in the day was big into optimizing these specific protocols and making it, you know, incredible how much less data you had to send across the wire. Well, it's a little harder to do that effectively these days because so much traffic is encrypted, and encrypted traffic by definition is a little hard to deduplicate and, you know, compress and all that kind of stuff because of the nature of the data. But there's still technology out there that can improve that traffic in that way that we used to do it back in the day with our riverbeds. And in fact, Riverbed is still a player here. Well, that's one of their claims to fame. With their SD-WAN solution, they will optimize traffic for you going through the SD-WAN tunnels. Another player in this space is Silver Peak. If you think you need that for your traffic mix, you can check a box and license there. I believe they call it the Unity feature, where you can optimize traffic. And there's, you know, these are Riverbed and Silver Peak are two vendors that are at the top of my list when I think of that specific feature, WAN optimization. There's other vendors that do it as well, and basic optimization of things like just basic TCP optimizations are available kind of across the board. They're pretty rudimentary, and everybody knows how to do them. When you get into the fancier protocols that need more special knowledge, then you need a more specialized solution like a Riverbed or a Silver Peak. But that can help you with that, reduce some of that traffic, what's actually sent over the wire. Either with protocol optimizations or maybe tokenization, where rather than sending a whole chunk of data across the wire, if the solution has seen it before, oh, here's a token representing this much bigger chunk of data. I'll just send you the token, and you get the token on the other side, and the other side goes, oh, yeah, we know what this is. It's the big chunk of data. But you never sent the chunk of data. It's so cool.
Magic. Oh, I love magic.
Now, those are just one caveat here, Ned, is that these are typically license up solutions. You're going to pay extra to get the WAN optimization feature, depending on the solution. Everybody's different on this.
Right.
Let's pause this fascinating podcast, Ned, because you and I have to talk about our sponsor, VMware. We're having the annual VMworld conference. Well, I say we like it's you and I. I mean, it's not us. It's VMware's doing the thing, and it's digital, and it's online, and it's free this year. And hey, we're both registered.
Yes, indeed. And there are some really interesting sessions that I plan to attend. I think the topics that I'm most interested in are everything that's happening with Tanzu. Like that whole platform, whether it's mission control or what's been bundled into vSphere to get Kubernetes going, I've been looking through the session catalog, and there's just a ton of stuff for me to learn there. And hey, anything to do with VMware running on one of the public cloud providers also grabs my attention. What's pulling you in, Ethan?
Well, first of all, I'm laughing because you said Tanzu, and it's like he's a Kubernetes believer. He believes.
I do.
I guess I mostly do too. But well, of course, me, I went after all the networking stuff. So a lot of NSX stuff. So there's a session here about shifting to distributed systems architecture using NSX, and there's some performance related stuff, and there's a container networking deep dive, and all that kind of stuff is really cool to me. And of course, VMware Cloud and AWS networking deep dive is another session that I'm very keen on, because there's a lot of plumbing that's going on behind the scenes to make all of this interesting stuff happen.
Right. So if this sounds interesting and enticing to you, dear listener, we've got a registration link for you to hit up. It's special just to Day 2 Cloud, because that's how awesome we are. And you can find that registration link. It's bit.ly/D2C VMworld. That's bit.ly/D2C VMworld. And we thank VMware for being a sponsor of the Day 2 Cloud podcast. Now, we talked a little bit about what I'm going to have to put on premises, which is some sort of probably physical router that's doing the SD-WAN magic, or possibly something virtual. What's the other endpoint for something I'm putting in Azure or AWS? Is it a service that I'm consuming, or am I standing up a virtual appliance in my VPC?
Most always, you're standing up a virtual appliance in your VPC, but it depends. It depends on what the capability of the SD-WAN vendor is. So, for example, if you're dealing with, I'm going to give you a list here, Fortinet, they're another security specialist. They can do a lot of security in the box. If you're dealing with like a Palo Alto, CloudGenix, Palo Alto just bought CloudGenix, Cisco, Viptela, Riverbed, HPE just bought Silverpeak, so HPE Silverpeak, 128 Technologies, Oracle, Telari, all of those are solutions where, yeah, you're going to have a virtual appliance of some kind that you stand up in your, like your Amazon VPC, and that is where the entry point for your SD-WAN fabric from your cloud VPC is going to be via that that virtual appliance. Now, that means essentially, it looks just like any other office you would have with a physical appliance sitting in it. Only it's a node sitting up in the cloud. But as long as you've set up the networking correctly, you're going to stand up from that virtual appliance. Your tunnel's going to the rest of your SD-WAN nodes. And yeah, that's what you've got. And in fact, that's one of those things to ask and think about. Hey, SD-WAN vendor, I have to stand up a virtual appliance. How big of a virtual appliance do I have to stand up? What's going to cost me to run this thing? Yeah, it's a good question to ask, because the more inspections maybe you're asking that box to do, and the more tunnel endpoints that you need if you have a very large SD-WAN fabric, the more you're asking that virtual appliance to do. It's got to maintain tunnels. It's got to do encryption. It's sending traffic back and forth. It's doing inspections and so on. It's writing logging data and monitoring data. So how big of a box do you need? It's one of those things to ask.
And how much is that going to cost me?
how much is that going to cost you?
Running in the cloud. And now I'm standing up a machine that I'm somewhat responsible for. I have to patch, keep it up to date, and also keep it turned on and pay for it every month, which is different than what I'm doing now to a certain degree.
You mentioned patching. Now, in the SD-WAN world, that tends to be a bit easier, where you've got a central console and you're managing all your nodes and you're just rolling out the patches from that central console. It's typically not so bad, but yes, you're right. It's a thing. Now, before we move on from this topic, though, there's one other point to make here, and that is there are other vendors that are going to handle the virtual appliance thing for you in the cloud, where it's that other model we were talking about earlier, where they've got their own magic network and they get you very close to the cloud. It's not inside your VPC, but it's like they dropped you off at the driveway kind of thing. Now you can go ahead and walk inside. These vendors, what they've done is they have built out their own network. And the point, if you're going to the cloud, the point of the SD-WAN box that's at the edge of your physical network is just to get you to their network. They'll send your traffic across their network as quick as possible to get you to whatever the cloud data center is you're trying to go to. And from there, you go up into your VPC, et cetera. So these vendors, I'll give you some four names here. Ariaka, Cato Networks, who we were talking about before because they got that security play. VMware VeloCloud, used to be just VeloCloud, but VMware bought them. And then Versa Networks. Versa Networks is another one with that sort of an architecture. So that's an interesting, you actually hit on a really key point here, Ned, which is two different major SD-WAN architectures when it comes to these cloud on-ramps. You got the vendors that do almost everything for you, Ariaka, Cato, and VeloCloud, and Versa, and then these other vendors that you're standing up a virtual appliance in the cloud and adding your cloud VPC to the SD-WAN fabric in that way, the Fortinet and CloudGenix and Viptela and Riverbed and Silverpeak and 128 Tech and Telari and a bunch of other ones. There's so many SD-WAN vendors that are out there. There really, really, really are.
Now, that does lead to an interesting question around management and administration of this solution. My network engineers, they are pretty used to using the CLI to jump on things and issue commands and make configuration changes. I take it the paradigm's going to shift for them a little bit if they're working with these SD-WAN solutions.
Well, right. And again, it depends. So there's a lot of UIs from these different solutions. CLI's out there, yeah, for a lot of it, but GUIs with centralized management where you're building policy and pushing policy out to the SD-WAN node out there is more the way to think about it. So here's a for example. Let's say you need to add a new office to the SD-WAN fabric. Well, you've already got your central console. You've sent the SD-WAN appliance out there. It comes on the network with ZTP, discovers where home base is, and then downloads policy from the central management workstation is roughly how it works. So did you have to do anything with that SD-WAN box other than basic configuration to get it on the wire? Nope. Now it's got all the policy it needs to do the magic that it needs to do. That's more the management paradigm for most of these SD-WAN solutions. So they may be used to the CLI, and that's fine. If they're into automation, a lot of these solutions are automation friendly. Very often the control cluster, if you will, that manages all the SD-WAN endpoints for you will have an API so you can run playbooks against it if you want and program things in that way. That's not universal, though. It's another one of those, okay, is that super important to you? Then you need to find out from the SD-WAN vendor. You know, if you say, okay, my world is built around Ansible and everything's got to be Ansible friendly, you better ask the question. Don't make any assumptions that that's going to happen. That is increasingly common.
All right. Now, another thing that I'm concerned about is my remote workforce. It is 2020. Mm-hmm. I've got a remote workforce that's expanded tremendously. And some of the products that we produce are for the U.S. government. So we're beholden to some pretty strict regulations when it comes to privacy and data protection. I'm worried about all these users. Right now, like I said, we're backhauling back to that central DC, but I want them to be able to use their internet link like they need to. Is there anything that SD-WAN can do at that individual user level? Or is this specifically for like remote sites with multiple users?
Again, it depends. You added a complex detail about protecting that those remote users' traffic in a way that is compliant because of government regulations and so on. Let's set that aside for a moment, and let's back out a little bit and then say, if I talk to a remote VPN, or if a remote VPN user wants to access my resources that are in the cloud, can I get them there any faster? Or do I have to tunnel them like to headquarters and then we just kind of figure it out from there? Mm-hmm. Okay, some of the SD-WAN vendors will offer a VPN service of some sort where it kind of looks like any other endpoint. Using a VPN client, you connect from that user's endpoint, PC, Mac, whatever it is, to the SD-WAN cloud that maybe the vendor is providing for you. And then they take that user's traffic and, just like any other remote office, tunnel it lickety-split to the cloud as quickly as possible. That stuff exists. And if the service also does all the security protections that you're looking for, because you've outsourced that to them, then yeah, you get that functionality too and the compliance you're looking for and all of that. This is not everyone's doing it the same and you can just assume it's going to work like that, because that just ain't true, buddy. Sometimes the answer is what you said. You kind of need to stick with the paradigm you've got. You're going to terminate those VPN connections on a VPN concentrator in headquarters and then send them out that way as if they were in the office. You kind of know you're getting the compliance that you need. Others, it is you can bring them in and then send it out to the third-party security service like we were talking about, like a Zscaler or something like that. And again, it depends. But the capabilities vary widely within SD-WAN vendors. There's a new acronym kicking around the remote VPN world, ZTNA, Zero Trust Network Access, which just means VPN, but we need it fancier.
A new acronym.
But, well, it does have a certain connotation. Yeah, ZTNA, Zero Trust Network Access, is all about, I don't trust whoever it is connecting to my VPN at all. So I'm going to assume a zero trust posture, profile them, and then I'll admit them to the network if they've checked all the boxes. We've had variations of that technology for a very long time. It's just been, you know, a little bit of marketing repackaging, I think. But it gets tricky when now you're saying, okay, I got very strict government concerns of the nature of the data that people are accessing. And so you want to be careful here, assume nothing, and make that part of your proof of concept, make that part of your POC to make sure that the SD-WAN vendor can indeed check that box and have them explain to you exactly how it's happening. Don't just have them say, yeah, it'll be fine. Because there's a big thing here. You might assume, if they're connecting to my SD-WAN service as a remote access user, there's magic in the VPN client. No, actually, not usually. There's nothing in the VPN client other than basic connectivity. There's nothing there. It's not like they're sending, a bunch of inspection magic down into the VPN client at the endpoint. All they're doing is tunneling that user's packets up to wherever, and then the inspections have to happen. And so there's a bunch of, you better show me and explain exactly how this works, because if it doesn't work the way it needs to, I'm going to be in trouble, kind of thing.
All right, so let's say that I am moving to a POC, a proof of concept. You've kind of sold me on the SD-WAN, Mr. Consultant, Mr. Ethan Consultant, and I'm curious about it. I want to at least prove it out and see if it works in a specific instance. So what sort of questions are you going to have for me, and am I going to have to ask the vendors to make sure that a solution is appropriate and going to fit what I need in my organization?
Okay, you got your pencil handy?
I do.
This kind of a list. Okay. This is a bunch of these here. And a lot of these we've talked about. So this is actually a good way to kind of refresh a lot of what we've talked about here, Ned. So the first question I would ask, what special features are built into the solution? It's just basic connectivity with the SD-WAN magic sauce sprinkled where it's, testing and finding out the fastest path, or is there more? By more, I mean security. That's a big one, and a lot of the SD-WAN vendors are banking on the security functionality being built in. And then if it is security, okay, well, how is that done? Is it integrated with a third-party service like a Zscaler? And if they say integrated, what does that mean? Does it mean it's integrated into the UI and it's very simple to connect your SD-WAN box to your Zscaler account, or is it like a thing? Because sometimes it's a thing, all depending. Another question here about features would be WAN optimization. So security is a big one, but WAN optimization is another. We talked about this. This is what is saving the number of packets going over the wire, which depending on what you're sending into and out of the cloud, you could actually save some bucks if you've got a WAN optimization solution that actually can handle or is effective against your traffic load. If your traffic load's encrypted, probably doesn't help that much, but depending on what you're doing, it might be. So that's the first question I'd ask then. So special features, security, how's it integrated? Does it do WAN optimization? Those are top of mind for me. Second question then, how big of an instance do you need for your SD-WAN virtual appliance, if it's the kind of an architecture you need to run your virtual appliance? And then do you need to run two virtual appliances? We didn't talk about this, but some people love to run an active and a standby, let's say, and have VRRP between them or something like that. Is that a recommended architecture? Is that supported? Do you have to have that? Mm-hmm. Kind of a big deal if you're relying heavily on your SD-WAN fabric to carry traffic between your VPC and headquarters, let's say. So what does the redundancy mix look like and how does it work? Will it work in the cloud like you expect, et cetera? And then remember, an SD-WAN device is made up of tunnels. It's all tunnels. So, okay, there's encryption in those tunnels too. So don't underestimate the size of that virtual appliance. What's it going to cost you to run that thing every month? Mm-hmm. Yet another question, how is SaaS traffic impacted? We talked about how some SD-WAN providers have some kind of a cluster that they're basically going to give you a little time slice of via multi-tenancy that lives near different SaaS providers. Cool. Find out how exactly they're doing that. If they say that they can improve your SaaS performance, is it that cluster thing that you like actually are terminating a tunnel up on the cluster up there that they're managing? Or is it something like, we analyze your traffic, and if we detect it's going to Office 365, we're going to send it out the link that's faster to Office 365. And 6 to 1, half dozen the other, whether that actually does anything for you, it's one of those things you'd want to test.
Right.
So that's a third question. And the thing we were just talking about a minute ago, remote access VPN, is there any integration there? Some of these solutions, the answer is effectively, there's no integration whatsoever. Good luck. yeah. Others, they actually have an add-on feature that's specifically for this, and they make kind of a big deal about it. They're definitely going to gloss over this if they can. You know, I've talked to some of these right. providers and the SD-WAN provider, and they're like, if you can just connect a tunnel to us, it's all good. No matter where the tunnel comes from, it's fine. And then we will do our magic. And, you know, others, it's like, no, this is an actual integrated solution with full observability and all the rest. Mm-hmm. That's a question of, because of course, remote access VPN is important to all of us. It's kind of a big deal. You want to make sure that however you're relying on it, that that works right. Right, now here's another question for you to ask in your proof of concept. Key partnerships with cloud providers. It's one thing to stick your virtual appliance in a VPC because you don't have to have much of a cloud partnership as an SD-WAN vendor to make that happen, right? You just you can stand up whatever you want. It's your cloud chunk, your cloud VPC. You can do what you want as the consumer. But a few of these SD-WAN vendors have really tight integrations with public cloud in some way or another. Like there's Azure VWAN came up. Some of these SD-WAN providers have a tight integration with that. Okay, well, what does that mean? What does that get you? And some of what it might get you is like a unified console where you're looking at your cloud console and you can see your SD-WAN connection in there. But again, not universal. All the SD-WAN providers, some of them have nothing. Some of them have this tight integration. Some of them are in the middle of working on a thing, kind of maybe. So you got to ask if that's important to you. And see whether or not you care. You might not care, but I think the answer, the big deal why that matters to you, though, Ned, is visibility. You want to see how your cloud presences, where your cloud stuff is running, integrates into the rest of your fabric and what traffic's coming into and out of that. And if you got a tight integration, that can be nice. You know, that can help a bit. But again, a lot of the SD-WAN vendors, it's a virtual appliance. It's packets to them. That's all they care about. They don't know anything about the cloud. Their cloud, they would say it's a benefit. We're cloud agnostic. We work in all the clouds. Yeah, and they don't integrate with any of them. You know, they just happen to work. You can stand up a virtual appliance. There's no integration there. But so, okay. I think you get my point here. You want to ask and see and find out exactly what that is. You get that visibility. You know, ideally, you're going to be able to do some setup easier in the cloud, that kind of thing, if that's a big deal, especially if you're standing up and tearing down a lot of these SD-WAN fabric endpoints in your cloud often. Mm-hmm. Just a couple more. Key partnerships, not just with cloud providers, which is what I mentioned before, but also with others, with other companies that are out there. What I mean by that is, for example, I mentioned, I think, Zscaler. I've brought them up a few times before. Is the Zscaler connectivity integrated into the UI? Or is it, yeah, we work with Zscaler. You can stand up a tunnel to Zscaler, right? Because as long as it's a tunnel, we're good. You know. Well, okay. So find out what those special partnerships and integrations might be. Could be that aligns really well with you. There's some middle mile stuff that we haven't talked about. Do you know what I mean when I say middle mile?
Is that the mile before the last mile, but after the first mile?
It is exactly that, actually, oh my goodness.
Yeah. I win.
As his name implies.
Think about
the section in the middle, which is effectively to us, the internet cloud. The middle mile, there are providers, a couple of them come to mind, Teridian and Mode. These guys are services you can subscribe to that promise to optimize your traffic as it goes across the internet because they do magic for you in the middle mile. Ooh. Well, does your SD-WAN solution integrate with your middle mile provider? Like again, Teridian and Mode being the fancy ones here that have an established global presence and so on. Probably not going to be free, whatever these solutions are, but it's something to ask, especially like you mentioned this company here, Ned, your company is a globally spread company where a Meridian, nope, Mode or Teridian are might be really interesting and beneficial.
Sure.
So good question to ask if it integrates with your SD-WAN solution. That can get you to the cloud faster. But I got one more, Ned, one more proof of concept question. I'm going to stop going on and on. You know, the last one is cost. Cost considerations, baby. And this one is huge. SD-WAN isn't free. I mentioned it's proprietary technology, so you're kind of married to this thing. Once you get it in, you can't just mix and match based on how the costs are this month.
Right.
So it's an investment. You know, this is a big investment just to get in the door with SD-WAN. Two, you got your public cloud egress charges, right? So what, maybe WAN optimization is super important to you. Maybe it isn't, but that's a thing to think about. Can you control your public cloud egress charges with the SD-WAN solution in some way? And then finally, and this is actually much bigger than the other two, licensing. Oh, my word. There's so much licensing with so many of these solutions. It's not you get all the things. It's you get a thing, and then you check the boxes for the rest of the things, and every time you check a box, it's going to cost you more. So there will be licensing, and also there will be licensing, and then after that, there's going to be some more licensing. So know what you're getting into here and prove it out in the proof of concept. Don't let them... You know how in car reviews, they usually give the people testing the car, like the top car with all the things, and it's got the sunroof, and it's got the chrome tailpipes and the flame on the side? And the car you get isn't that one.
Nope.
make sure in your POC that you're getting, you know, we turned all the licenses on for you. No, okay, fine. But you better know what that's going to cost you if you decide you want all the things.
Right.
So, right. All right, man, I just rambled for almost 10 minutes there. What questions have you got?
You know, I think the licensing thing bears repeating because that's something that I've certainly run into when it comes to any sort of POC and especially networking stuff. It's not uncommon for the networking device to have all the licenses enabled when you get that proof of concept or that trial version of the software. And then when you actually want to run it in production, you realize how expensive that platinum license is that includes all the features. I'm thinking of Netscaler in particular and their different licensing tiers. And you're like, oh, that is not included in the basic license at all. Okay.
Right. Yep.
Well, no, I think this is a really good start for anybody who's considering SD-WAN. Now, let's say I need to roll this all up into a report back to my CEO, Gary, or CIO, Gary, who gave me this assignment in the first place. Oh, Gary's such a headache. You should have seen him last year at the Christmas party. The shrimp cocktails got out of control. And so anyway, I need to give a report back to Gary. And I'm asking you, Ethan, to sort of summarize a few key takeaways that I'm going to lead with in my executive summary, because I know Gary isn't going to get past that first paragraph.
You know, you said shrimp cocktails and things getting out of control. You're not supposed to drink the shrimp cocktails now. It's not the way that works.
Tell anyway. That to Gary.
Okay. So let me summarize a few things. Now, a lot of it we just kind of mentioned in the proof of concept, but let me hit a few highlights, a few keepaways. Number one, SD-WAN cloud on-ramps, which although we talked about SD-WAN more broadly too, cloud on-ramps is really the focus of this discussion. They are going to cost you money. So what's the ROI? Are you going to get an ROI? Is what you're getting, what you're spending to get this functionality where your traffic in and out of the public cloud is faster, are you getting a cost benefit where this makes sense? Or is it just like, oh, faster is better, we got to have that? Yeah, do you? Because let's just take a step back here. Public cloud providers have strategically placed their data centers all over the world in such a way that you're supposed to be able to get there fast already, just with an internet connection. Do you need SD-WAN to optimize that traffic? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. It's worth thinking about because this on-ramps technology, it's not free. That's my one take. Put that at the top of your report to Gary. Do we need this, Gary? I don't know, man. I'm not sure. Second takeaway, second thing here, WAN optimization, we talked about trying to reduce the amount of traffic we're sending into and pulling out of the cloud. Well, if WAN optimization, you think, is just this magic silver bullet that's going to just magically reduce all of this traffic going through that tunnel, No, you really got to evaluate WAN optimization carefully against your own real world traffic mix. Because again, that's not free either. That's very likely going to be a license level up. And your mileage is very definitely going to vary. So in your POC, very carefully, if WAN up and reducing that traffic is a big deal to you, you better test that thoroughly, again, against real traffic as best as possible. Mm-hmm. And then last, and this is kind of a big deal, even though we didn't talk about it much, but visibility. Think about visibility. These are complicated solutions, especially when we get into things like integrating a lot of different, number one, services like a security stack in your SD-WAN solution, but then two, integrations with different providers like Teridian or Mode or Zscaler. When these solutions break or when they don't perform well, hey, this was supposed to speed things up and something's slower, this doesn't make sense. Right. Okay. How do you troubleshoot this? Do they offer good tooling to help you troubleshoot it? Is there a console that you can drill into easily? Or is it a nightmare trying to get the statistics and data that you need to be able to see what's going on with this thing? But not, I mean, that's troubleshooting stuff. And of course, engineering, those folks care about that. But even visibility more broadly, are links being used like we think? Are we getting the usage out of our internet provider that we think we should be because we paid extra for that circuit because it's supposed to be more wonderful and the SD-WAN solution doesn't think it's more wonderful because it's doing the testing across it and thinks it sucks. So it's using the other one all the time. Do you have visibility into these kind of things? And once again, the SD-WAN solutions vary widely. So, you know, tell Gary when you're trying to make your decision that being able to know what the solution's doing for you is a really big deal. And that's some of the criteria there. So money, ROI, WAN optimization against real traffic, and then visibility. Those are my three big things.
Awesome. I will make sure that makes it into my executive summary in my report to Gary. All right. If folks want to know a little bit more about SD-WAN, is there anywhere they should go look or just kind of Google SD-WAN and it'll get you there?
So if they've listened to this show and SD-WAN is kind of new to them, go to packetpushers.net. This is self-serving, I guess, but frankly, we've done so many shows over the years, Ned, on software-defined networking broadly and then SD-WAN specifically in the Packet Pushers catalog that if you go to packetpushers.net, hit the search bar at the top of the page, just type in SD-WAN, a ton of content from vendors we've covered, SD-WAN sponsors that have come on to talk about their product, articles that we've written, articles that guests from the community have written. There's a ton there. There's an SD-WAN vendor page you can check out if you're looking for a list of vendors, just to kind of get your shopping started, know where to look and kind of what they do. There's a ton of information there. Again, packetpushers.net. And then if you want to level up even beyond that, Ned, we've got Ignition. So Ignition, $99 a year, and we've got SD-WAN white papers in there that go into even more detail and can help you understand what these products all do and how they work and how you would evaluate them and so on and so on.
Awesome. Well, we'll include, you know, links and all that kind of good stuff in the notes for this podcast. But I think that does it for today. So thank you, Ethan, for doing all this tremendous research and bringing the knowledge so I don't have to do any of it.
And I want to thank the vendors that spent time with me just to kind of go over where their solutions are at. I had several vendors respond to a query so that I could put all this information together. We had folks from Fortinet participate. We had folks from Ariaka give us some information. Cato chatted with me. VeloCloud talked to me. Versa Networks was there. CloudGenix chatted with me. Folks from Riverbed. And hopefully I didn't forget anybody. There was a whole lot of folks that spent quality time getting me caught up. So my thanks to all of them.
Awesome. And you know what? Thank you to you, dear listener, for tuning in. We hope you found this informative and interesting. So virtual high five, bam, to you. If you have suggestions for future shows, we'd love to hear them. If you've got an interesting story to tell, we'd love to hear that too. You can hit either of us up on Twitter. Ethan is at EC Banks and I am at Ned1313. Or you can fill out the form on my fancy website, nedinthecloud.com. Until next time, just remember, cloud is what happens while IT is making other plans.